Well, so after being here the entire day, you still get a little bit more of me. Today, the plan is to talk about privacy in the video conferencing scenario, let's say. My name is Saul, and I've been working in the RTC industry for pretty much my entire career. Right now, I'm working with the Jitsi project. The Jitsi project is a set of tools that allow you to deploy a comprehensive video platform, have APIs to video enable existing applications and mobile SDKs as well, so you can video enable anything you sort of already built. We believe that every communication should be private, should be secure, and it should be hassle-free. And we strive to get there by building these tools and making them available to people such as yourself. So thanks a lot for being here and listening to me tell you about all these stories. Privacy is a very big topic these days. It has been mentioned throughout the day in a number of times already. But before I sort of dive into it, actually I want to dive into it from a different angle. First, I want to discuss what are the threat models that affect video conferencing. So after all, a video conference is a very exposing activity. We are showing our camera to somebody else on the remote end, and that has some implications that might be more severe than an audio-only call, so we need to keep this in mind. So this does not aim to be a comprehensive list of all the threats that exist, but I'm going to focus on some of them, and then we're going to see what we can do about them and how Jitsi can help in this regard. So the first threat that we can face is pretty generic. It doesn't necessarily only affect video conferencing, but is having a compromised environment. So sort of from the base of it, if our operating system has been compromised, there's really not much we can do because it's at the root of it. So from an app's perspective, we're at the mercy of what already happened. Imagine you have a rogue video camera driver that copies frames and sends them over to a remote server. Our application wouldn't know this. There's not much we can do, but it is a threat that we need to consider. The browser could be compromised. Browsers have a huge attack surface these days. They are more complex than many operating systems were 20 years ago, let's say. So it's a huge attack vector, and we have to make sure we are up to date and all these things to make sure that we are not a target. And last, we have our own web app. Our application could have been somehow injected with malicious code, and then our communications are compromised. So these are the things that we think of when we talk about having a compromised environment. The last two items here could be replaced by one, which is using a mobile application. In a way, its complexity might be lower than a browser, so that is always an interesting option as well, because typically there has been a lot of involvement in securing mobile applications, sandboxing and stuff, so something to consider, maybe not use a desktop application. Another of the threats is user fingerprinting. So first of all, what would be potentially very severe is knowing the physical location of whoever we're talking with. Maybe they are in jeopardy if this becomes known. And so we need to make sure we either conceal that or are mindful about it. Then it's user agent information. Kind of piggybacking to what you just said, if it's easy for somebody to get a grasp of what browser and what version of it they're running, maybe there exists an exploit that can be used to then infiltrate into that person's computer. Or maybe there's a zero day we can buy in the black market that nobody knows about for that version, and then again, we can compromise. So limiting all the exposure of all these metadata that is left around is something which we need to consider when we're about to have a video conference in a kind of a harmful situation, if you will. And then, of course, there's networking information. I'm pretty sure you have heard about leaking IPs in WebRTC and how you could know the IP of your VPN and this and that. So all of these, in the end, you always leave a certain trail of metadata wherever you are. Having a video conference doesn't eliminate that. So we need to consider all this information that we're leaving. And the most severe of them all is probably eavesdropping or good old wiretapping. That would mean that somebody somehow is listening into our conversation, is looking at the video we're looking. This could be accomplished by having a compromised environment, be that the application, be that the server. But there is also, to a certain degree, a very more crude shoulder surfing. If you're having a conference in a public space, somebody passes by, looks at your screen, sees something. So what can we do about that? So the plan is, can we help? Well, I'm here to try. So the plan is, we cannot solve all the problems. So what we're going to try is to look at some solutions to some of these problems and maybe provide some advice for the rest of them, to try to have the most secure possible video conferences. What we strive for is sort of, you think about how PGP was called pretty good privacy, literally that's what we aim for, like pretty good privacy, akin to meeting with these people you want to communicate with in a sort of private, secluded environment around the table. This is what we aim for, but in an online capacity with all the challenges that it has. So, first and foremost, common sense, which seems to be scarce these days sometimes, but let's try to use it. So, if we need to have a meeting, which is, you know, critical, and somebody would be in jeopardy if it's known where they are, maybe we shouldn't have it in the first place, or maybe not there, and go to a more private place. I'm a video conference user of every day, maybe not all meetings need video. If shoulder surfing is a concern, you can use a screen polarizer, or you just mute the damn video, and then nobody will see where the other person is. This may sound super common sense, I realize that, but I thought we have to say it. And then the hardest of them all, which is try to ensure that your equipment hasn't been compromised. There are some interesting articles in the Freedom of Press website on how to run, for instance, CubeOS, which is an operating system where each application runs in like a tiny virtual machine, thus limiting the exposure of, if you have compromised part of it, at least the rest is not compromised, and so on. So there are things that can be done in that regard. It's not necessarily an impossible problem to solve. Now, on a more concrete fashion, how can we help? So I think the major way in which we help solve these problems is by being all in when it comes to open source. All the Jitsi-Meet components are open source. All the server components are open source. All the mobile apps are open source. The Android app can be built without any Google services enabled. This is the build that is available today on FDroid. And we made it so it's easy to self-host. So, you know, you can choose to trust me because I'm here today, but that's irrelevant because you can verify. And that's the whole point. Trust less and verify more. And everything, you can find it right there. And feel free to start poking. Now, some little gadgets to help with other things. One of the things I mentioned is concealing the location of a user. So we recently introduced in beta a background blur, which is not only a way that it looks cool because we have this bokeh effect around your head. So we use TensorFlow to do face detection on the browser and blur the background. And the idea here is that the background is harder to distinguish. So if there are specific aspects that would allow somebody to know where somebody else is, this would be a way to help you conceal that. It is by no means perfect, and there are some performance implications because TensorFlow is expensive, but we're working on it, and it's getting there. It's getting to becoming something useful that can be done. Now we have Something else in the planning phase, we have applied to be a Google Summer of Code organization. Again, we have done this for a few years. And one of the projects we have we want to do with a student is voice obfuscation. So the idea is to introduce a module in Jitsi Meet that allows us to, modulate your voice before it's sent to the server. And this way we could use it to conceal who you are. And this should give us plausible deniability. Like if there is an unauthorized recording of a meeting, this should allow you to say, that's not me, because that's not my voice. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, yes, I will, but I heard end-to-end encryption is cool and solves all the problems. Let's take a look. So you start reading about, you know, WebRTC literature online, you probably saw, and it has been mentioned even here, WebRTC is peer-to-peer, and WebRTC has built-in encryption with SRTP DTLS, and this means there is no way to do mine in the middle, and because it's peer-to-peer and it's encrypted, it's end-to-end encrypted, and thus we have no problem, right? I want to show you a video. So here, this is me having a meeting with myself, as it happens, obviously. And then my other self joins in, so third participant. And now we're going to see, so my IP address there, that's the IP address of the remote endpoint where my media is flowing. Now, one of the participants leaves. We keep looking at the IP address of the remote endpoint. And at one point, that thing has changed, and it's now flowing into a different place. What happened here? So in Jitsi Meet, one of the core components of our infrastructure is the Jitsi Video Bridge. This is our advanced video router that allows us to do smart video routing to use your bandwidth in an efficient way to and scale our conferences. Now, this also means that our server technically has access to your media. Ha! Big whoop. You didn't notice, did you? So you have to sort of take my word for it or verify. Now, we do have an optimization, which is in the one-to-one case, we can actually bypass the server because we don't need all the advanced functionality. So you establish a one-to-one call directly, and that is technically, yes, it's end-to-end encrypted. But actually, that's not the point, because did you see any consent window? Did you see the browser telling you that your media is now going elsewhere? No. So it doesn't matter that it's end-to-end encrypted, because I sent it elsewhere and you didn't know. And how would you know? Well, if you open WebRTC internals, you would see that we open two peer connections. One is direct, the other one goes via the server. And each connection has its different set of certificates. And what we do is we move the strings from one to the other when a third participant joins, and so on. But there is no way for you as a user to realize this. Yes, you can put a green lock, but that doesn't mean anything. You need to, if you're really concerned about this, you need to look into the application, and you need to know that it's doing the right thing so that you don't blindly trust what's happening, because right now all you can do is trust. I can move the strings to a different peer connection, and you don't know. So does this mean that everything is broken and there is no sort of way to solve it? Well, I think not. The whole point here was to say that don't trust, but verify, and better yet, run your own. And the way we try to help here is by making it super easy. I've been given demos where I've set up a server from scratch in less than 3 minutes. And now we provide different ways to do this. So we have pre-built Debian and Ubuntu packages that you can install on your own machine. We have a comprehensive Docker setup, which includes recording, Etherpad for document sharing, all of it just by flipping four switches in a config file, and then everything just works. Now, I know that the astute amongst you are probably thinking, yes, I will. Should I trust your binaries, though? That's a great question. Maybe not. So the manual install is also available. You can always compile all the packages yourselves, and then you should be at peace, hopefully. And last, there is a very good Ansible playbook by the Freedom of Press Foundation on their GitHub repo. It hasn't been updated in a while. It looks like they might not be using it at this point. But it will be a pretty good start for someone who wants to go in that direction. And I'd like to finish by showing you something. Very recently on the French radio, Edward Snowden gave an interview. This is a screenshot from that interview. So he was using Jitsi Meet, and he said, "I set up my own technical system for this call." This was, no doubt, one of the proudest moments of my career, because it's like, this is exactly what we wanted, that people run their own, because you don't need to trust, and you can verify. Thank you. And if my timing is right, we have time for a couple of questions, I think.
So, are there some questions? Questions. I didn't know that of this Snowden. Pretty impressive. Congratulations. Great.
Well, obviously, you may not want to ask questions in public because. So feel okay. Free to send me encrypted or plain text email. I'll take it all the same. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.